Okay, good morning, good Chodesh to all. Chodesh Kislev, Chodesh of Nisim, of Hanukkah. We need a lot of Nisim for the Klal and for the Prat. We should all be Zeicha to Nisim. K'moisha Asalonu Nisim, Ravoyseinu Bayam Mahim, it's Hashem also Bizman Hazer. And we should just say Basuras Tevis for all of Klal Yisrael.
Amen.
We are up to the Gemara towards the end of the medium width lines, just before the very wide lines. You'll remember yesterday we discussed the halacha, although to be honest, it wasn't so much a halacha, it was more an eitzah. If Yehuda, in the name of Rav, said that Edim, and we then extended it to Dayanim, should not really sign on a shtar until they're fully aware of who's joining them. Because in the event that more Edim come along, or more Dayanim come along, and they turn out to be posel, well then the whole group is rendered posel, and that can be very embarrassing, because you've signed a shtar, and your Edus will not be accepted. It turns out it's not because that you are an invalid aid, but rather by virtue of the fact that there was another aid posel in your group, that is mevatel the whole kat Edus. So if you remember, we discussed the same is true with Dayanim as well. So have a look. We're on the very last medium width line, in the middle of that line, Gufa. What does Gufa mean? Very important. We have this word fairly often. We have pointed out in the past, but it's important to point it out once again. Gufa always means, without exception, we like rules without exception. Gufa always means, when the Gemara quotes a Mishnah or a Braisa, or in our particular example, it's a member in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, on occasion, the Gemara quotes it, as it were, by the by. The Gemara quotes it in order to ask a question, in order to bring a proof. Having finished with that, then the Gemara on occasion will say, Gufa, which means, let's now examine that particular halacha itself. So here's a classic case in point. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav said a statement that Edim would be well advised not to sign until they've checked who their fellow Edim are. Now, Rav Yehuda Amar Rav's statement was only brought into our sugya, as it were, by the by, because we were trying to extend that to Dayanim. We were trying to work out whether that's machloikus in Rameh and the Chachamim, etc., etc. Okay, we're finished with that now. And we turned out that actually, no, that's not the machloikus, and everybody agrees, etc., etc., etc. So now the Gemara says, pause. Gufa, gufa means from the word guf, body. Let's now examine the actual body of that particular statement. Rather than having it brought in just by way of proof, or by way of question, or whatever it may be. Now let's examine it itself. Gufa, let's examine the goof of that line. So here is a classic case in point. Says the Gemara, Gufa. Let's now have a look at that once again, having brought it in, by the way, as a form of a question, maybe that's the machlokes, etc., etc. We've really closed that particular avenue. Now let's have a look at that line itself. Gufa, Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Now let's look at the whole statement. Ein ho edim, we're now on the very wide lines. Ein ho edim choismin al hashtar, v'chule, etc., etc., etc. As he said before, edim should not sign until they have found out who are the other edim going to be. Tanya namahochi. By the way, just in parenthesis, Rabbi Leo Dovid, this is Negev for you as well. We've come to a rather bizarre situation when it comes to a wedding, comes to a chuppah. So there's the Sheva Brachas, there's the Edim, and traditionally those are distributed to various people. Now, we just have to know, firstly, the Brachas essentially should be all recited by the Chosm. The fact that we distribute it to this Rav and that Rosh Hashiva, etc., etc., is all very nice. And it's a way of being mechabed this one and that one, etc., etc. But essentially, it's called Birkas Chasanim. The reason why the Chosen himself does not say all the brachas, Rishonim explain, in order not to embarrass if somebody is incapable of reading. Imagine the Chosen would be unable to say the brachas. So it would be very embarrassing. Therefore, we distribute it to others who are able to say the brachas, and that now becomes standard procedure every chuppah. That's number one. Number two, the Eidim has also become a strange situation, because very often when it comes to the brachos, so there then the Mechabed, the big Rosh Hashiva, and the big Rav, and the big Mashkiach, etc., etc. And the Eidim is just any old Tom, Dick, and Harry. Essentially, it should be the exact opposite. Essentially, the most important position, the most important role that needs to be played is Eidim. As we explained last week, unlike all other areas of Halacha, the Eidim who witnessed the Kiddushin are actually creating the Kiddushin. And if the Eidim do not see the Kiddushin, or if the Eidim are not kosher Eidim, then if you have a Kiddushin without Eidim, that's not Kiddushin. They are actually not married. It's not like, remember we explained this in the past, if somebody's Mechalal Shabbos and there's no Eidim, well, it doesn't mean he's not Mechalal Shabbos. He is a Mechalal Shabbos. We just can't punish him technically because there were no Eidim. But he still is Mechalal Shabbos. But in the case of Kiddushin, it's not like that. In the case of Kiddushin, if there are no Eidim, meaning the Eidim didn't hear, didn't see, or they're invalid, then it's not that we have a Kiddushin just without witnesses. Rather, there is no Kiddushin. In Brisk, for example, they're most particular about choosing the Eidim. Who is honored to get the brachas? They're not so particular. Whoever, as long as he's Jewish and male. But when it comes to the Eidim, oh, then they check out, has to be an Odom Choshev, has to be somebody who's not over Averas, etc., etc., etc. That's just as an aside. It's important to make sure that we have Eidim who are Kasherim. By the way,
I've heard that one should, when calling up the Eidim, they should say to the exclusion of everyone else. But I've noticed recently a Chasnas, they're not doing that.
No. So this we mentioned yesterday, that the common accepted practice is not to do that. The only reason why some suggest you should do that is because if there's family members in attendance, so maybe they will be considered an aid. Once you have a member of the family who's an aide, well, he's possible, and that will pass the whole group. We discussed this yesterday. That's not the commonly accepted practice. Whilst we're on the subject, yet another strange thing that happens in the chuppah nowadays is that after the chuppah, after the chosen gives the ring, they do the kiddushin, then they have somebody reading out the ksuba. And more often than not, they make that into a whole big kibud, and they call up Yamoid, Harav, Hagon, this Rav, and this Rosh Hashiva to read out the Ksuba. We need to know, in old times, reading of the Ksuba was not considered to be a prominent kavod at all. The only reason, why did you read the Ksuba? Just that you should make a break between the first brachas, which are Kiddushin, and the latter brachas, which are Nisuin. It used to be that the gabbai of the shul would read the ksuba. It's just a technicality. You actually don't need to read the ksuba at all. We could just equally have a 30-second break. So it became now a whole kovod in order to be mafsik between the kiddushin and the nisuin. Somebody told me quite a funny thing, that Rabbi Aaron Kotler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was once present at a chuppah, and they did the kiddushin. And then they wanted to call up somebody to read the ksuba. Like as we said, there's no real need. It's just to make a hefsek. So they called up somebody to read the ksuba. Mechubad with kriyas ha-ksuba. Harav, Hagon, Hatzadik, Haroish, HaYeshiva. Give a whole bunch of titles. So Baron Kotler just stopped him and said, well, okay, that's it. You're giving him so many titles, there's already enough of a hefsek between the kiddushin and the nisuin. You don't need to read the ksuba anymore. You're half an hour hesped, harav, hagon, atzadik, hadis, and that. There's enough of a hefsi. Okay, back to our subject. So look at the Gemara. On the first white line, ein or eidim, choysman al-ashta, etc., etc. Now, this was authored by who? Rav Yehuda Omar Rab. Tanya nami hochi. It turns out that actually, This is stated in a brisa. Kach hoyu nekiyei hadas shab Yerushalayim oisin. The nekiyei hadas, I'm very curious, how do Art Scroll translate nekiyei hadas, which literally means a clean, pure minds, as it were? How do they translate that?
Exactly so, pure-minded men.
Pure-minded men, which I'm not sure exactly what that means. But either way, the Nakia Adas in Yerushalayim.
Like meaning, our neighbors, the Nakis.
Right, okay. So the pious people of Yerushalayim, this is what they used to do. Number one, three things. Number one, Loi Hoyu Chosmin al Ashtar. They would never sign on a shtar. Elohim came Yoidim, unless they would know Mi Chosim Imohen. Okay, so it turns out that Rav Yehuda Amar Rav's Chiddush is in fact common practice amongst the Nekiyei Hadas in Yerushalayim. V'lo yoyu yoshvin bedin. Neither would they sit on a bezdin. Again, like we said before, Elohim ken yoydin mi yoshev imohen. Lest they be fully aware of who is sitting with them. And finally, and this is interesting, v'lo yoyu nichnosin b'se'uda. They would not sit down to eat a meal, Elohim ken yoydin, unless they would know mi meisei v'imohen, who's sitting with them. Okay, so they would come to a wedding, and they find themselves sitting at a table, and there's other people, and they don't know who they are. So they would not sit down at the suda until they were first were mevarer who those people were. Why? So in the case of the first two halachas, we understand. You have to find out who the other Edim are, you have to find out who the other Dayanim are, as you said yesterday, because otherwise, maybe the last Edim or Dayanim will be posel, and then you become posel, etc., etc. But why is it necessary to first clarify who's sitting around the table before you eat a suda with them? So look at Rashi. Some suggest, but we'll see, this is not what Rashi says. Some suggest it's a question of midos toivos, of being polite. I think we've all found ourselves in this situation once or another. You know, you sit down at a wedding, and it may well be that you know the guy sitting next to you, but there's some other people at the table, you've got no idea who they are. And sometimes it'll be awkward. There you are, sitting at the same table, eating the same meal, and you've got no clue who these people are. It's rather uncomfortable. So some suggest that's what the Nekiyei Hadas Yerushalayim wanted to avoid before they sat down, in order that it should be a comfortable, pleasant atmosphere for everybody. First, all of the guests would introduce each other. My name is this, my name is that, everybody knows each other. But if you look at Rashi, Rashi says something completely different, nothing to do with a comfortable atmosphere. Says Rashi, Ve'ein nichnasim l'suda, etc., shegnai hu l'talmidei chachamim. It's an embarrassment to talmidei chachamim, leishev eitzel am ha'oretz b'suda. To sit next to an ignorant person as a suda. Unbelievable. And for a Talmud Chacham, these Nekiyei Hadas Yerushalayim were clearly Talmidei Chachamim. For them to sit next to an ignorant person would not be Kovod HaTorah. And that's why they first had to clarify one moment, who else is sitting around this table? Not, like we previously suggested, in order that there should be a nice, pleasant atmosphere between the guests. No, nothing to do with that. Rather, it's a question of Kovod HaTorah. We first have to find out, are there Talmidei Chachamim on this table? If there are, we can sit here. If not, then we cannot. That's where Rashi explains. Okay. With this, we have now finished the first halakha in the Mishnah. Let's now go back to the Mishnah. We're now looking at the second halakha. And this will be our introduction to the next line of the Gemara. We're going back into the Mishnah. We're on the fourth line of the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, once again, a machloikas between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Zeh, towards the end of that line, Zeh, poisel, dayonoi, shel zeh. Remember, Reuben and Shimon have both selected one dayon. And then the third dayon has to be selected, a machlokes, either by the two litigants or by the two dayonim. Now the Mishnah is telling us that each one, any one of the two dayonim, can invalidate the other. So Reuven chose Levi, and Shimon chose Yehuda. So you've got these two dayonim now, Levi and Yehuda. Each one can invalidate the other. Levi can say, I'm sorry, I do not accept Yehuda as my fellow dayon. So too in reverse, Yehuda can disqualify Levi. That is the opinion of Reb Meir. Look at the Mishnah, the Chachamim Oimrim, that no. Amosai, when is that the case? Only Bizman Shemevi Aleim Raya Shehim Kroivim Oipsulim. You cannot just disqualify the other aid because you don't like his nose. You can only disqualify him if you manage to bring a proof that he's related or that he's apostle aiders. In that case, well, he has to be rejected. Aval, if however, im hoyu ksherin or mumchin, but if they are kosher aidim, kosher dayonim, or mumchin or expert dayonim in pi bezdin, einoy yochel lepoislam, then they cannot possibly pass along. So it sounds like, according to Reb Meir, either dayon can pastel the other on any grounds. Doesn't say why. Doesn't have to be on halachic grounds. I just don't want to sit on a bezdin with this other dayon. I disqualify him. Why? That's the way it is. Whereas the Chachamim are saying, no, you can only disqualify him if you have halachic grounds to do so. If you find out that the other dayon is a relative, or he's posel, or he's incompetent, then you can invalidate him. But if he's a kosher and a mumcha, an expert dayon, then you cannot disqualify him.
Rav, is it the dayon that can object to the other dayon, or is it the litigant?
No, the litigants have now chosen their two dayon. They can't now backtrack. Reuven has chosen one dayon, Shimon has chosen the other dayon, and as we mentioned, they're going to have to choose a third dayon, either the two litigants or the two dayonim. But they cannot passel each other's dayon. What you can do, however, is that one dayon will passel another dayon. On what ground?
That's the opinion of the Chachamim, not Rebbe Meir.
Reb Meir says that either dayon can passel the other one on any grounds whatsoever, even non-halachic grounds. The first machlokes, again, we have two machlokes, actually altogether there's three, but we're dealing with the first two. The first machlokes in the Mishnah to Reb Meir and the Chachamim is who chooses the third dayon? After the two litigants have chosen two dayonim, who now chooses the third? Is it the two litigants or is it the two dayonim? Machlokes number one. Machlokes number two. Even when the two litigants have chosen the first two dayonim, forget now the third dayon. Can each one passel the other one's dayon? Maybe I said it wrong. Not that the dayon passels the other dayon. Reuven, maybe I said that incorrectly. Reuven can passel Shimon's dayon. Shimon can passel Reuven's dayon and say, I'm sorry, I'm not prepared to be judged by the dayon you brought to Bezdin. Why? On what grounds? So that's the machlokes. According to Reb Meir, on any grounds. I don't know. I don't like him. He looks too scary for me. I don't like his nose. Whereas according to the Chachamim, no, you have to have halachic grounds to reject his dayon. What does that mean, halachic grounds? Well, he managed to prove that he's invalid because he is related, or because he's apostle, or because he's incompetent. But if he's a dayon kosher and a mumcha, sorry, you cannot just reject him. Yes, right.
According to Reb Meir, isn't it a Musti Shemra issue?
What do you mean?
Well, according to Reb Meir, there's no guidelines. They don't like him for this, that, and the other thing. Now, all of a sudden, people say, oh, you heard this guy's been rejected by Reb Meir.
Could we explain? He says, I don't know. He just looks too scary for me. I don't like him. He didn't accuse
him. Faisal, we're allowed to go say that about people without any, you know. As a matter of fact, the raya to this is that that the Chachamim say, no, you have to be, we have a reason, it has to be apostle or this or that. They're very specific. Since when are we allowed to just go around and say, you know, I don't hold by this guy? Why? Eh, I don't like him. When is that allowed?
I take it you've prepared the Gemara. The Gemara asks this question. Says the Gemara, look on the third wide line. Zeh poisol dayonai. Says the Gemara, kol kiminei the posil dayonai? Question mark. Is it his koyach, his prerogative, just to passel a dayan? On what basis? On what grounds? Bishlem, according to the Chachamim, who say quite clearly that you have to have halachic grounds, fine. So he's coming with a taina. He's coming with a halachic taina. But if you go with Rav Meir, it sounds like you can just passel him on any grounds whatsoever, even if they're not halachic. That's what Gemara is asking. Kol kamine, is that really his koyach? Is that his prerogative just to go passeling dayonim? Look at Rashi. Zeh poisel dayonim shel zeh, v'zeh poisel dayonim shel zeh. Yochoy loy mar loy. He can say to him, loy odun lefonov. I'm sorry, I'm just not prepared to be judged in front of that dayon. Why? Z. Finished, that's the way it is. And that's the moral question. How can you do that? How can you just puzzle a dayon? On what grounds? Says the Gemara, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Now you might recognize this because we quoted this earlier. We quoted it earlier by the by, but here's the source. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Be'er Kois, Shebesuria, Shanu. You remember early on in the Gemara we mentioned that Be'er Kois, the Bote Din in Surya, had Dayonim who were not very knowledgeable. And apparently it was known that they were not the most competent Dayonim. So Remeya says, that's why Reuven can reject the Dayon of Shimon. Because it happens to be, we're talking about a Dayon who was taken from the Beis Din of Surya. And they were notorious there for being incompetent. So I'm not just passling him without basis. Rather, I'm passling him because he's considered to be incompetent. I'm not prepared to rely on him. That's my prerogative. Says the Gemara, are you trying to insinuate? Havol mumchim loy? The only reason it's your prerogative to passel the other ones dayon is because they're incompetent. But were they to be mumchim, if Reuven selected his candidate as dayon, a dayon mumche, not from Surya, then are you telling me that Rav Meir would hold an inachnami? You cannot reject him. But that's a big problem. Why is it a problem? Says the Gemara, Avol mumchim loy? Question mark. But doesn't the Mishnah continue on in the Sefer and it says, and the Chachamim say this all a quote, Bizman Shemevi Raya Shem Krovim Oipsulim Aval Im Hoyuk Sherin Oi Mumchim, if he bears it, Eina Yachal Paislam, quote unquote. So the Chachamim are saying what? That you cannot merely passel the dayanim without basis. It's only if you prove they are halachically invalid or incompetent. But if they are mumchin, then you cannot invalidate them. Now, one moment. I thought you just told me that Rav Meir also agrees to that. Didn't you tell me that Rav Meir only says you can invalidate him because there's dayanim from Surya are incompetent? But if they're mumchin, then you can't. So what are the Rabbanon saying? Well, what's the machlekas b'chal? What's the Rabbanon saying that? No. If they're mumchin, then I'm sorry to say you can't invalidate them. Well, nobody argued with that. Even Rav Meir only said you can invalidate them when they were incompetent, not when they were competent. So what's going on? Michlal, says the Gemara, we can deduce from there. The Rav Meir, mumchin nami ka'omar. it must be that Reb Meir even holds that you can invalidate the other one's dayon, even if he's a mumcha. And that's why the Chacham was saying, no, we disagree. You can only invalidate them if you have some halachic basis for doing so. Namely, he's a posel, or he's a koroiv, or he's a non-mumcha. But if he's a mumcha, then you cannot pasel him. So it sounds like that Reb Meir holds you can pasel him, and the Chachamim hold you can't. But 1 minute ago, you just told me the contrary. 1 minute ago, you just told me that according to Reb Meir, you can only pasel the dayon if he comes from Surya and they're incompetent. But if they're mumchin, then you cannot pasel them. And if you cannot pasel them, according to Reb Meir, why would the Chachamim need to emphasize that you can't pasel a mumcha? Rabbi Yossi also holds of that. Reb Meir also holds of that. Says the Gemara, Ochi komar. This is what was meant. Not what was said. We know what was said. That's presenting the problems. But what does it mean? What it means is, Avo im hayuk sheirin. Remember, there are always two reasons why a dayan can be invalidated. Either because halachically he's apostle. Why is he apostle dayan? Because he's related. Or because he is over averus. That's one reason. The other reason why we can invalidate a dayan is because he's simply not a mumcha. He's not an expert. He's not competent. Now, what did the Chachamim say? The Chachamim say, if the dayanim are ksheirim or mumchin, then you can't pasel them. Now the Gemara is qualifying or editing that. Says the Gemara, Ochi koma, what was really meant was, Abol im hoyu ksheirim, if the dayanim are ksheirim, na'asu ka. Mumchim epi bezdin. And eino yochol epoislo. So it turns out that what the Rabbanon meant, what the Chachamim meant was not if they are ksheirim and also mumchim. No. If they are ksheirim, then it's considered as if they were mumchim. That's the only criteria that we're going to look at. According to the Chachamim, if the Dayanim are Ksheirim, it's game over. It's like they are Mumchim, and nobody can disqualify them. Ah, so we're not talking about Dayanim who we know to be Mumchim. If it's Dayanim that we know they are Mumchim, as already explained, then Reb Meir also holds you cannot pasel them. That's not the Machlokes. So what is the Machlokes? There's one case that they agree, there's one case that they disagree. What's the case that Reb Meir and the Chachamim agree? If the Dayanim are really mumchim. If we know them to be as mumchim, then everybody agrees you cannot invalidate them. Even Reb Meir agrees. You can't just go around invalidating Dayanim. The only case you can invalidate them, says Reb Meir, is if they come from Surya, therefore they are alleged to be incompetent. But if they are coming with a track record of being a dayan mumcha, they cannot be disqualified. Everybody agrees to that, both Reb Meir and Chachamim. What's the machlokes? The machlokes is when they are not mumcha. Rather, they are ksheirin. They're ksheirin. But we don't know them to be mumcha. According to the Chachamim, you cannot invalidate them. Because once they are ksheirim, the automatic assumption is we assume they are as if they are to be mumchin, and you cannot now disqualify them. Reb Meir says you can. Reb Meir says that if he's known to be a mumcha, you're right, then you cannot disqualify him. But just to assume he's a mumcha just because he happens to be a kosher, no, that's not good enough. And then you can invalidate him. That's the machlokes in the Reb Meir and Chacham. Yes.
According to the Chachamim, how do they make peace with the Mishnah, which is, you know, they choose the third dayan. Basically, according to the Chachamim, anybody kosher is accepted. That's the big, that's what they're choosing. There's no choice there. They're just saying, they really are saying anybody except for those who are puzzled, which is obvious, like, you know, if they're not kosher because they're puzzled, they're not choosing a puzzle person. So clearly they're talking about a kosher person, and now they have a choice. Do we want this guy? Do we want that guy? I don't want him. So where, how does that whole thing work if everybody's accepted?
We don't have any records in Beis Din of who this person is. Reuven shows up in Beis Din. Here, I've chosen Rabbi Pliny from Haifa. Okay, is he related to you that we do have to check? No, he's not. Is he a Rasha? No, he's not. So he's kosher. Okay, that's it. We don't now inquire whether he's a mumcha. Therefore, you cannot disqualify him. According to Ramea, you can disqualify him. I need to have evidence that he's a mumcha. But I don't assume. According to the Chachamim, once he's kosher, nasek mumchin, he's considered to be a mumcha. The assumption is a mumcha. Reuven would not bring an incompetent dayan to Beis Din. Ramea does not accept that. Ramea says, unless I know that he's a mumcha, then the concern is always that he is not.
And if you hold that the litigants are the one that choose the dayan, I as a litigant, I don't have a right to choose what kind of, whether I want a mumcha or not?
You do. But the question is, can the other one reject it? Can the other one say, listen, you've brought this dayan from Haifa. I've got no idea who he is. Maybe he's incompetent and he's going to mess up the whole case.
Yeah, so I don't have a right to say that?
That's my focus, Ramea, the Chachamim.
Right, so according to Chachamim, as a litigant, I don't have a right to say this guy's not qualified enough for me?
If he's kosher and he was brought to Beis Din, the assumption he's a mumcha. That's machlokes. Do I need to know he's a mumcha, or can I assume that he's competent based on the fact that he's a kosher dayan? That's the machlokes. Okay, we have to hold it over here. Ms. Hashem, tomorrow we'll carry on.
Sure.
Beware of the cult of...